Can everyone hear me? Yes? Good, thank you. Welcome to... Sorry, I forgot to give Lauren the nod to turn the recording on. Welcome to the Wollongong Local Planning Panel. My name is Robert Montgomery. I'm the chair of the panel. My background is in town planning, and I have a number of years' experience working with various councils, both local government, state government, in various planning positions and senior management positions. More recently, I run my own private planning practice, and I also sit on two other Sydney Council local planning panels. I'll just introduce the other panel members. Well, I'll ask them to introduce themselves and tell you a little bit about who they are and their background. Helena? Helena, sorry. Wrong direction.
Hi, my name's Helena Miller. I'm also a planning consultant. Yeah, it's on. Okay. I'm also a planning consultant. I'm the director of MG Planning. I've got over 29 years' experience. Is that not working? Over 29 years' experience as a professional planner, and I'm also on two other local planning panels, the City of Sydney and Campbelltown, as well as this one.
Good afternoon. Scott Lee is my name. I'm also a town planner with a long history in local government planning in various positions before about 7 years ago starting my own consultancy. So I'm a consultant town planner now. I reside up in Barrel, and I'm also a member of, besides this planning panel, Campbelltown planning panel as well. Thank you.
Hello, my name's Trish McBride. I'm the community representative. I have a background in occupational health and safety. I've lived in multiple countries around the world and seen the good and the bad of design. And when I had the opportunity to have some input into Wollongong Council, I thought it was just a wonderful idea. So that's my background.
Thank you. Just to tell you a little bit about the panel, we're a panel constituted under the New South Wales planning legislation, and the purpose of the panel is to provide a public hearing, so to hear concerns from applicants, residents or other people who may be impacted by certain development applications, and also to make the decision. The panel's been out to the sites today. We've also read the reports that you would have seen on the council website. We've also seen the written submissions from objectors on each of the items. The way that we'll operate the meeting, and I probably should say for the record that we opened the meeting at 5:05 p.m. We'll hear from submitters first, and then we'll hear from the applicant's representatives on each item. Speakers have a maximum of 5 minutes each to speak. Council staff have a timer, and when you hear a sound, it means your 5 minutes is up, and we'd ask you to just sum up at that stage so we can move on to the next speaker. The applicants and their representatives will often be given have longer than 5 minutes. Don't be concerned about that. The reason that they usually have a longer period of time is that the panel expects them to be able to respond to the issues that have been raised by speakers. Can I ask you please to show respect to other speakers by listening in silence? The meeting's audio recorded, so when we call your name and ask you to come forward, take a seat at the desk and speak nice and clearly into the microphone so it's recorded. Following the public meeting tonight, The panel will adjourn and make our decisions, and those decisions will be placed on the council website usually within 3 working days. So if you keep a watch on the website, our decisions will be published as soon as they're available. Before we start, are there any, just on conflict of interest, just so people are aware, each of the panel members have signed a declaration that they don't have any conflict of interest in relation to any of the matters that are on the agenda. I'll just ask each panel member to confirm that. Helena?
No conflict of interest.
Scott?
No conflict of interest.
Trish?
No conflict of interest.
And no conflict of interest from me. So we have three items on the agenda. We'll do them in the order that they're listed. The first item is 12 Dallas Street, Kiraville. I have one speaker registered, Irene Toniti. Is Irene here? Would you like to take a seat and tell us your concerns? And if you can just start with your address, please.
I live at 53 Dallas Street, Kiraville. Good afternoon. As a resident, I strongly object to the provisions of DA 2019-506 at 12 Dallas Street, Kiraville, which is grossly unsuitable and out of character for the area. A 19 or more bedroom boarding house is totally out of keeping with the character of the neighbourhood, which consists of houses on suburban blocks and some low-level flats. Boarding houses are generally placed in 2B zoning local centres or 4B zoning mixed use, and so this proposal does not meet the requirements of the State Environmental Planning Policy Affordable Renting Housing 2009. While many of the boarding houses in the College View Estate, which includes Dallas, Binder Streets and Ashcroft Place, are occupied by up to seven university students, it has not had an adverse negative impact on the amenity of the area, apart from parking problems. On the whole, the permanent residents coexist with the students in a harmonious manner. Serious traffic and parking problems already exist within the estate, and that many people sharing a house own a car. The streets are very narrow and car parking is limited to 2 hours during the daytime. For this development, only 5 car spaces have been allocated, which will result in up to 14 car owners with nowhere to park their vehicles. The additional traffic generated is also of concern. This unsuitable DA must be thrown out as it does not comply with the standards required nor the land zoning 2A residential. The area is low density housing and caters chiefly for families. I am also concerned about building setback and I ask if it complies with council requirements. Residents in that area have invested a lot of money to live in a low-density residential area such as this. This particular block of land at 12 Dallas Street has significant native vegetation, 50 years old, as the original owners planted all native Australian trees. Now that the Wollongong City Council has adopted climate emergency, there must be some responsibility in tree removal for climate change entailing sequestering carbon. Byron Bay Council aims to be carbon neutral by 2025. I was up there 2 weeks ago and spoke to an environmental lawyer who was on... Who is directly responsible for this. Some residents have been told that the DA has been thrown out. In this case, why is it still on the records? I question fire hazard safety and the noise level generated from this proposed building development. If this proposed building were to go ahead, it would set a very serious precedent for further developers to create other out-of-character boarding houses in this and nearby areas of Kiraville. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Just let me clear up the issue of whether or not the application's been rejected. Mm. The application is still a live application, and the panel's role tonight is to make the decision on that application, whether to reject it or whether to approve it. So it's still an application. It hasn't been rejected.
Okay.
Have you read the report and the recommendation of the staff?
No.
Okay.
No.
Whoever gave you the information may be confusing it. The report, we have a report that's prepared by the council staff with a recommendation to the panel, and the panel consider that recommendation and make a decision to either adopt it or otherwise. The staff recommendation is to refuse this application.
Oh, is that what it is? Well, that's been blown out of proportion. Okay.
So hopefully that's
why it's got around. That's why it's been a whispering process. That's why the words got out.
But hopefully that clears that up for you.
Thank you.
Thank you
for hearing me.
Is there anyone else who's not registered who wishes to speak in relation to this? No? And I don't think the applicant's here. Is that right? No. So we'll finish on item one. We'll move on to item two. There'll be no more discussion meeting on the Dallas Street one, so you're welcome to stay if you wish, but there's no need to because you won't be missing out on anything. So it's up to you. Item two is Bulleye Bowling Club. We have Tony Stoddart. Now, is Tony Stoddart here? You're objecting to this proposal?
Yeah.
So please take a seat. And if you can start with your address and tell us what your concerns are.
My address is... thanks for letting me speak. My address is...
We won't let you go to sleep.
Actually, I could do with a bit of a snooze. Do you mind? Thanks for letting me speak anyway. 3 Para Street, Balgowney, is where I live. 3 Para. That's a good microphone you got there. Is that all right? Yeah, 3 Para, P-A-R-A. Yeah.
Thank you.
I frequent markets. It's just one of the things I enjoy doing. So I've kind of got an inside view of it all. And I just wanted to put a simple statement through. I've put it in my phone, so I'll just read it out. It's straightforward. Another farmer's market in Bulleye, in my opinion, is overkill and will definitely affect the trade of local businesses, particularly the Bulleye fruit and veg opposite the school just down the road, and, of course, the fruit and veg and shops in Thirroul and Bulleye Showground Market held every Sunday. Thirroul and Bulleye Showground Market also have various artisan, handmade, repurposed and recycled products for sale. Things are very tough in many small businesses in Australia, as you know, as well as in many markets. I know for a fact that Bulleye Showground Market is in the process of being rebuilt from the ground up after the new owner, by a new owner, manager Rick Powell, which has only been going for 13 weeks. A new market right next door will no doubt have a negative effect on this market, which is in its early growing stages, as well as many local businesses in Thirroul who sell the same and similar products. Some businesses are only hanging on by a thread. Therefore, I encourage Wollongong City Councillors to visit the local Bulleye Fruit Shop, Bulleye Showground Market and the township of Thirroul and talk to the proprietors, who are hard-working, honest people and would love the opportunity to voice their opinion and explain their circumstances. That's it.
Thank you. There's no other speakers registered, submitters registered. Is there anybody else who wants to speak in relation to the markets? Please, if you'd come up, introduce yourself and tell us your address and your concerns, please.
Adrian Barnett. My address is 17 Karela Road, which is spelled K-A-R-E-E-L-A, Road Winuna. I'm with Bulleye District's Tennis Association. One of our biggest concerns about these markets is they of a Saturday, is that it will clash with our competition, our coaching, and other events which we have at the tender centre. We've got a car park there at the moment which holds 18 cars. The car parking itself is very tight. We also run various tournaments with the other associations in the area. And our main concern is the traffic management and car parking. Even though they said they're going to put some car parking on one of the existing greens, our concern there is they've got an application there for about 72 or 75, depending on which phrase you look at. So each one of those store holders, if they have a vehicle, there's 70-odd cars, trailers, etc., to service those stalls. Plus, then you'd obviously have people coming to those markets. So our main aspect is parking and traffic flow.
Okay. Can I just ask you where the car park for the tennis courts
It's
is?
Actually, there's a set of seven tennis courts. The car park is to the southern side of those courts.
To the southern side of the courts. Okay.
Yeah, is it on your plan there?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So that's we also use, there's a little bit of a grassed area we use as an overflow for our our tennis. So it's going to conflict with our events which we have there every Saturday.
Okay. We might put that to the applicant and see what they might have to say about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. And lady, would you like to come forward? Start with your name and your address.
Suzanne Montague, with a Z, not an S, at 814 Lawrence Hargrave Drive, Coldale. I'm the event coordinator of the Illawarra Festival of Wood, which happens on the second weekend in October at the Bulleye Showground. And within our contract with Bulleye Greyhound Racing Association is that no other event happens on that weekend at the showground. We're in our third year, and each year we're growing, where we've gone from 3,500 attendees to 4,800, and we're growing each year. And we have a very much a traffic management plan in place that works. So our main concern is that, the same with the tennis club, is that if you've got a farmer's market on the Saturday morning, it's going to be a traffic nightmare with our most of our people that attend come somewhere within a five-hour radius of the Illawarra and the Illawarra. Most of them come by car. We impress on our website that you can go there by public transport, but our main concern is the traffic overflow that it will happen unless the participant is willing to block out certain weekends within the year, like the Bulleye Showground does.
How often is your festival held?
Once a year.
Once a year.
Once a year, but we're growing each year, so this year we're probably looking at about 6,000 people attending. And
what day?
Saturday and Sunday, and from 10 till 5 p.m. both days. So
and where do people park?
They park within the showground. If you go past the roundabout, there's one car park. There's 1, 2, 3 car parks, and then around the showground. So we make it a one-way system where no one, so the traffic flow keeps coming.
Okay.
But if you've got people coming to the market, then they're probably be coming into our festival. We're saying, no, you can't park here because it's for the festival people. Going around the roundabout, back out again. We've managed to have it work out that we're not causing any traffic issues on the Princess Highway whatsoever. So our main concern is congestion, and then also issues with people coming to park, and then we're going, well, no, you have to park down there, that sort of thing.
Okay. Thank you. Nobody else? Yes, you come forward and introduce yourself and start with your address, please.
I had no intentions of speaking here tonight, but I thought I'd say something after Sue jumped up. My name's Darren Hull. I live in Parramatta Avenue, Corrimal. And I'm the current manager of the Bulleye Showground on behalf of GBOTA. What I'd like to speak about is Sue runs the Festival of Wood, which she's just raised. We've got some other really big events out there. There's one actually in 9 days called the AMCA Motorcycle Event, Antique Motorcycle Swap Meet. And then we've got the Illawarra Folk Festival in January. All those people have expressed concerns. I can give you the consent number 2014-60G is the current consent for markets at the Bulleye Showground, and in that consent it says the markets cannot operate on the weekend of the Illawarra Folk Festival, the Festival of Wood, the motorbike event, so on and so on.
Can I just stop you there? Those
sure.
festivals, whereabouts are they held?
They're actually inside the Bulleye Showground.
They're in the showground. Okay, thank you. Yep.
Yeah. So basically all those organisations have expressed concern to me that well, they're pretty big events. Some of those events are marquee destination Wollongong events, so they're not 200 or 300 people. You're talking in the thousands. There's thousands camped there for the Illawarra Folk Festival. It goes for a week. And Saturday's probably the marquee day of all those events, if you spoke to the people that organised them. I'm not... I could probably give you an example. If you came out to the showground in 9 days and seen that motorcycle event in action and simulated a market at the Bulleye Bowling Club on the same day, I think you're going to quite clearly see what the potential hassle is with traffic. That's going to be pretty hectic. I'm not actually sure. Have they got parking marshals listed in their application?
We'll ask the applicant about that.
Yeah, because all the events at the showground actually have to have parking marshals.
Yeah, I suspect that the showground's a much bigger venue than what's proposed here than the markets.
As I said, I had no intentions to speak tonight. My plan was just to come and listen.
I'm sure the applicant would be overjoyed to think that there might be 5,000 people coming to the markets.
Yeah, I can say he's probably cashing on that, yeah.
Did you make a submission on behalf of the showground?
I didn't. I did put an email in initially when this was first floated, and I did express the concerns of those events. In relation to, they've all got traffic management plans, traffic marshals, and they do a really good job. It's really safe. Sue Montagu, the speaker before me, is a perfect example. They go to a lot of trouble to cause less drama as possible out at the showground. And I'd probably have more experience of that area than probably everyone in this room put together on how traffic goes, what works, what doesn't, who comes and goes. And it will be a drama. For those event organisers, anyway. If you've seen how they were set up, because a lot of their ticket areas are... like what they do is a lot of them had their ticketed events, virtually all those events, so they sell tickets online, plus they sell tickets at the gate. So most of them got sort of marquees... I don't know if you know the showground very well. Marquees set up outside the front gate, where people pick up their tickets and purchase their tickets. So it's going to be pretty hectic with the traffic, I can tell you. Particularly for those events.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and as my standard answer to a lot of them is that there'll be a consent put in place, I'd imagine, if this market does go ahead. And it's virtually something you have to take up with them because you're all doing the right thing. It's up to them down there to try and work in, basically.
Thank you.
That's all. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Steve Hughes on behalf of the applicant.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to respond to the comments that have been raised. What I would say is, just as an opening statement, we're seeking to create a resource here that diversifies and provides opportunity for the community to meet and to socialise, as well as it being a commercial market, if you like, in terms of the whole financial exchange that goes on. So it's very much focused on the community, and I do acknowledge that members of the community have come here today to express their concerns. Mr. Stoddart raised essentially the issue of competition. I would like to think that what is proposed out there is complementary to what is happening out there, in terms of there are a variety of markets that that are developing and growing. Some ebb, some flow. But at the end of the day, we have responded to a number of inquiries from people who would like to rent the property and establish a market there. But the problem that they face is that the challenge of coming up with the appropriate application and the investment that's required is often off-putting to them. So we've taken that upon ourselves to undertake that, so that we can then go back to those inquiries to seek an operator for the market. In terms of competition, I would like to think that, as I said, it's a complementary facility, and I think healthy competition is good. Adrian Barnett mentioned parking and the tennis club. We do have a detailed traffic impact analysis that excludes any of the tennis club parking from that analysis, so that's not included. The analysis has determined that the parking is more than adequate. We included in the application, it's a notional request for a variation based on council's DCP due to proximity of public transport, so we have the train and the buses servicing the site very well. Under those circumstances, the DCP offers the opportunity to request a reduction of 30% in parking, which would bring the parking numbers down to 50. We have, in fact, got 90, or approximately 90, because there's a loading area. The reason for the grayness, should we say, in terms of the number of parking spaces is because there's a loading area that will be used first thing in the morning and last thing in the evening. But when it's not being used, that can also be used for parking. So we have roughly 90, 95 parking spaces on site. So as I say, in terms of responding to Mr. Barnett's concern, we don't include the car park that he describes, nor do we include the area of grass that he suggests he uses for overflow in our calculations, or the calculation undertaken by the traffic consultant. Suzanne Montague raised the issue of the Festival of Wood. I would suggest that we are very receptive to working with the community, and we recognize that some of these events have very important community components to them. I would suggest that we need to have the opportunity to respond to these particular events that have been raised, and I think in principle we would be happy to discuss an exclusion, if you like, that responds to events that where there is likely to be some kind of bona fide clash. Whether that's every single event, I mean, I couldn't say without thinking about it in detail, but certainly the Festival Wood is an obvious one that you can see that there's potential for competition, perhaps, in terms of the parking and so on. And I can see that we need to be flexible in that regard, and we're happy to discuss that with council. I think that's the three key issues that have been raised. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Any questions from the panel? Thank you.
Thanks.
That concludes item two. So again, there'll be no further discussion.
Am I able to speak? Because I wasn't planning to speak either, but I've just come to this meeting at the last minute. I work for Sugar Markets. I've just got some important information.
It's difficult because we normally hear from submitters first,
yes.
And I did give people the opportunity. Look, I will make an exception and allow you to speak.
Make it brief.
And But what I'll do is I'll allow Mr. Hughes the right of reply if he thinks that's necessary.
Hi, sorry. I only just found out about this meeting. My boss is in Sydney and he asked me to attend. I work for Bulleye Showground Markets. My background is events and entertainment, and I've been working in the entertainment industry for many years. And working in events such as Eat Street Markets, Foragers Markets, Friday Markets, Bulleye Showground Markets, they're the events that I worked in previously. I no longer work for them. The way I'm looking at things as a problem, having another operator in the same area, is that at the moment, working for Bulleye Showground Markets, we're a weekly market, and what I have found is that whenever we are running our market, our new weekly market, which is a community market based in Bulleye at the showground, using a lot of the local community produce. And what I've noticed is when there's a market on in Kiama or Killalea or Cobberty or surrounding areas, another one is Coaldale, the market is affected because stallholders, unless this gentleman is planning to approach all different stallholders, which are outside of our local community, but the reason why we're running the market at Bulleye Showground is we're actually utilising our local community artisans, producers, people that have local cheese farms. So we're looking at, for example, Justine Honey, who lives in Bulleye. She makes honey and mead. She's a local honey and mead supplier. Another woman, the Great Cheese Co. What I'm finding is these people that have businesses are torn between the different markets that are operating, and one in such close proximity to another, I think will adversely affect the market that is currently running and trying to get traction. And I'm seeing that from a community perspective, where you have locals in the community supporting the market. Wollongong, I mean, I'm from Sydney originally, and I live in Wollongong, I live in Mangaton, so I find that being in Wollongong, it's a smaller area, we don't have as many people in Bulleye, so how are we going to get all of our community or people to support the stallholders so that they can earn enough revenue to make a market, another market viable? That's all I have to say. But thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Can I just ask one question?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, sorry.
Can you just clarify? I thought I read in the papers that the market that you're talking about is monthly, are you saying it's a weekly?
We're a weekly market, yep. So every Sunday, Bulleye Showground is the first of the month. We run the third of the month. We run the fourth of the month and the fifth Sunday of the month. And we have events every week. So this week, we just have a local community market with a mix of local artisans, produce, cheese, honey, clothing. And a lot of these people are the lady who makes silk frames. She makes it herself, but they're local. There's some out-of-towners, there's some resellers, but it's predominantly a local market. So,
and
it's weekly.
And that's every week?
It's every week except for the second of the month. Foragers Markets are running that. Foragers Markets were running the market weekly. However, they opted out of the contract with the Bulleye Showground, and my boss took on the contract because all the local storeholders that I was once working for wanted a weekly produce market. So all those storeholders that are local residents, some of them, not all of them, they are continuing to support the Bulleye Showground Markets as their weekly place of residence for a market.
So the Foragers Market, when is that?
The Foragers is once a month, and it's on the second Sunday of the month.
Was once a month.
Can I clarify this word?
No,
sideline?
No. So where are the Foragers Market?
The Foragers Markets run out of the same location. They are only the second Sunday of the month. We are every single week except for the second of the month.
Okay.
So that
Which
we have
together means one every week.
Yes.
Every Sunday.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
However, it's a separate, that's okay. Separate operator. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Hughes, did you want to just restrict yourself to something that may have been said by the last speaker?
I guess if we take a big picture view, all of these markets and community-focused events ultimately start to develop a character. I would say that there is room for a Saturday market to operate. I think in the fullness of time, the what that becomes remains to be seen. At the end of the day, we've outlined the kind of the core components of it, if you like, but the personality of that still has to emerge. And all of these events will develop, all of these the markets will develop their own character. So if you look at something like Umundi Market, which are kind of it's sort of nationally recognised as being a something that really has added a dynamic to the local community, that's the power of these kind of events. And I think that there is easily room for another kind of market to coexist, and it can actually grow the pie rather than having this kind of reductive thinking in terms of, oh, there's not enough to go around. Well, actually, there's the opportunity to grow this and kind of expand it so that actually more people start going to markets rather than taking the view that, oh, there's only a limited number of people. You know, the dynamics of communities are changing all the time, and that's what we're seeking to address.
Okay, thank you. Yep. Oh, yes. And I'll put that question to you, but from what I've heard tonight, it seems like your proposal is not going to impact so much on these bigger proposals. It'll be the bigger proposals that are impacting on you, because if someone's going to the showground to an event, if someone's going to the markets on your site, they're going to turn in there. They're not going to keep driving and think they're going to the showground.
Correct, yeah.
Because you're first, if you like, once you turn off the main road.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, there's the potential for confusion, I suppose. But I suspect it's going to be mainly people going to the showground will see your car park first and think, oh, there's a parking spot, I'll go in there. So I guess you're probably going to have to do something to control that on those events.
Possibly, but I mean, as I've said, we're receptive to kind of working with other stakeholders, if you like. And in terms of who's managing parking, the proposal is that there will, on the day, there will be people managing the car parking. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So did you submit any sort of plan of management or any sort of? I'm just trying to understand how this market would distinguish itself from other markets and existing offerings.
Mm.
So are you planning to do something different to what the existing, like is it a produce market with artisans? Is it the same as what the other market that's already there? Or are you targeting a different type of market?
Well, in principle, the ingredients of the market are similar to some degree. However, you know, the particular makeup of the market remains to be developed. So in terms of the, you know, at the end of the day, a certain kind of business is attracted to the market offering. And so, yes, it's very much that kind of home-based type business and, as you said, artisan type products.
Okay, nothing further? Thanks very much. Okay, that concludes item two. We'll move on to item three. As I said, those people who are here for item two, there's no need to stay, but you're welcome to stay. We have two submitters registered. Item three is 19 Coaldale Avenue, Coaldale. Rebecca Goodman on behalf of 21 Coaldale Avenue.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. As you say, I am here on behalf of the landowners of number 21 Coaldale Avenue, which is the site directly to the south of the proposed dwelling. I'd like to touch on the main concerns. I appreciate you have our existing submissions, but the concerns that remain in relation to the impact on the amenity of number 21. Firstly, privacy. It's noted that a number of amendments have been made to the southern elevation, which are greatly appreciated, I do ask the panel to consider my concerns that still remain following these amendments as detailed in my written response, which was the second submission that I had made. So I won't go over those that have been provided. Solar access. The landowners are quite certain that the level of solar access currently received is not accurately depicted on the existing shadow diagrams. Not to suggest that's intentional, but they do believe they receive a higher level of solar access than what is currently shown in midwinter. They do appreciate the timing of that. There's a clear loss of solar access through the middle of the day directly outside their living room, where the owners regularly sit within their deck out in the sun. They quite know that quite small space where the sunlight is available. It is already minimal, and it is being further reduced, and that is shown on the plans. There are gains in solar access located towards the eastern end of the yard, which is not as commonly utilised for just sitting outside in the sun, and this is due to the prevailing winds in the location up there on the headland. I ask the panel to consider whether the solar access being gained is a reasonable compromise for the loss of solar access in the principal private open space area directly adjoining the living room. Visual bulk. The dwelling provides a floor space ratio that's 52% over the 0.3-1 allowance for the E4 zone, providing a floor area in closer keeping with the 0.5-1 permitted in the R2 low density. There's no direct objection to the actual floor area of the proposed dwelling, rather the manner in which it's been distributed throughout the site. To reduce the impact of the third story element of the dwelling, within the streetscape, the upper level has been set back from the front facade. This pushes the bulk of the dwelling back further into the site. In addition to this, the front setback itself, the setback to the front facade, has been increased to accommodate a suitable driveway grade into the semi-basement garage. This results in the third story being sited further back into the site and directly in line with the rear private open space of number 21. The semi-basement garage appears to be proposed for the purpose of fitting that third story within the height limit, and it's this third story that's resulting in the reduced amenity for number 21. I ask the panel to consider whether it's reasonable to excavate to this extent purely to accommodate a third story, the floor area within which could reasonably be accommodated within a two-story design. I believe there's a clear difference in the objectives of the R2 and E4 zones, with the E4 zone permitting low-impact residential development in areas identified as having environmental constraints and aesthetic value. I feel the assessment has given little consideration to the objectives of the E4 zone, rather assessing the site in keeping with the R2. Council has a control requiring a 3-metre side setback for walls exceeding 7 metres in height. This can be an increased setback if necessary to alleviate impacts on adjoining properties. In this instance, Council is taking the wall height of the southern elevation from ground level to the top of the void over the entry and living, which does not exceed 7 metres, and perhaps this is the correct technical approach for the numerical control. Yet no consideration is given to the fact the wall and parapet to the master bedroom extends to around 8 metres and provides only a 2.4-metre side setback to the southern boundary. It is this wall that adds the excessive bulk and resulting impact on the amenity of number 21. It's requested that the panel consider the objectives of this control and whether this is a suitable outcome. It would seem the assessment on my reading jumps between the direct application of numerical controls and an objective-based control with no real consistency. It's most apparent in the assessment of controls relating to visual bulk. It's noted Council has taken an objective-based approach in relation to floor space, allowing a density in keeping with the R2 zone, yet is directly applying written controls in relation to the number of stories, noting the two-storey height limit only applies to the R2 zone, not the E4. I would suggest this is because the scale of dwellings in the E4 zone are intended to be restricted to the 0.3-1 floor space ratio. The numerical control is noted to be strictly applied in relation to wall heights exceeding 7 metres without sufficient consideration of the objectives of this control. It's the cumulative impact of these that I have concern with. I don't believe that adequate consideration has been given to the direct impacts of the development on the adjoining neighbour to the south a consideration that I would have expected to be at the forefront of a design on this site, and I do ask the panel to consider whether the location of the third storey directly adjacent to a principal private open space area is a reasonable outcome in this instance. May I have one just additional comment?
You'll have to be quick.
Yeah, I will be. I do notice that the applicants have raised a previous consent approved on number 21 for a two-storey dwelling that extends further into the site. This consent has lapsed with no intent of proceeding with anything similar down the track. That design, I do also note, gave a high degree of consideration to the impact on the neighbour to the south, particularly in relation to solar access. Thank you.
So it's relevant, but it's not relevant.
I feel like it's being brought into the application as being of relevance.
Yep.
It's a lapsed consent. It's one with no intention of proceeding.
Yeah.
But if, given that obviously I can't counter the argument, I anticipate it's going to come up and...
Well, it's not relevant
to
this application.
I believe not. No. Okay, I'm fine. If you're of the same opinion.
Can I just ask, are you a town planner or a lawyer?
Yeah, sorry, I am a town planner.
Yeah, thank you.
Consultant.
I just wasn't...
Apologise. Yeah.
Just wasn't sure about that. Okay, any questions? No. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the next speaker we have registered is Kay Bishop. You'd like to come forward and start with your address.
Good evening. Kay Bishop, 23 Coaldale Avenue, Coaldale. I might come over as very nervous.
Oh, that's all right, don't be nervous. There's no need to be nervous.
Okay. I'll just read the spiel if that's all right. As we have stated in our previous submission to the Wollongong Council, our strong objection to the proposal of three storeys at number 19 Coaldale Avenue still exists. Whilst we understand the owners would like to get as much on their block of land as possible, even with the design changes regarding reduced windows and glass frosting, as I understand it, on the middle floor only, it will still be an issue for us. Our privacy will still be impacted in our backyard, and the veranda leading off the third floor only adds to the concern. Whilst there are a couple of homes in the street with three levels, these levels are built going down the slope facing the east, whereas this proposed home is on a flat block of land and is higher than the existing house roof. And if you consider a roof is not walked upon, there are no windows or doors or balconies, etc., for people to use. This third floor will be a livable space and hence our privacy is encumbered. Should a fourth bedroom be wanted or needed, could we be so bold to suggest that a bedroom could be situated in the gym room on the ground floor where there are bathroom facilities already proposed? Should three storeys go ahead, then the precedence is set for any future owners of number 21 Coaldale Avenue to apply for three storeys, which would have... we would have absolutely no sunshine during winter and compromised in the summer months, as we have a one-level house and one... I can't even read my own writing. The final worry is the stability of the land with the excavation to put the house down lower than it is now, and for the pool. We have owned our property since 1984, and remember that there was a slippage on the north side of the block of number 19 Coaldale Avenue. I have no idea what caused it, but I know it happened. Also, two or so years ago, during a massive rain and windstorm, there was also a land slippage at the end of the road caused by wind and rain blowing up the street and over the embankment. We hope you will consider our concerns and thank you again for listening to our objections. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Is there any other submitters that didn't register who wish to speak? No, well, we'll move on to, I have registered Alex Sandovac and Anne Trezise on behalf of the applicant. As you know, you each have 5 minutes, but if you would like to come down together to address the concerns that have been raised, that would be helpful.
Hi.
Good evening.
Good evening. I'm Alex. It's Alex Urena Sandoval. Can you hear me there? Okay. My name is Alex. It's Alex Urena Sandoval. I'm from Alex Urena Design Studio. I'm based in Bulai. I am the person who designed this project. Just a bit of background. I am based in Bulai. I have been designing projects in the Illawarra for the last 10 years. Probably about 100 projects, all successful DAs, I have to say. Before that, I've been a registered architect in Peru, in South America, for another 10 years. In Australia, I operate as a building designer. About this property, what I would like to say is that there is no... the house that I designed didn't appear there as a random drawing. There was a big preliminary assessment on the property. The first thing that we saw when I was presented to the site was that there was, in fact, an existing house that was significantly bigger to what the other properties in the area were. My first point of my first comment to the owners was that I didn't want to design a house that big, even though there was a precedent in there. My take was that we needed to scale down for the benefit of the street, and because we knew that there are neighbors around that will have concerns about what we propose to do there. The second thing that I noticed when we walked to the backyard was the textures, the views, the... And all the background and all the surroundings that are from the area. And I expressed to them that the design would incorporate simple lines, slim elements, reduce the scale of the proposal, and incorporate textures in its materials, in its composition, to sort of pay sort of respect to what's there, being, you know, those beautiful slate platforms at the bottom near the beach. And instead of proposing a house with, you know, big angled roofs, we were going to stick to something a bit more discreet. The other thing was, okay, it's important to mention that this property is also the south property for another project, which is being number 17, which is a very large house. And if we can see there on the photograph in there, the house next door in number 17, it's significantly larger even than the house that currently exists in number 19. And we needed to consider how... where we were going to place our project in relation to what's on 17 and what's on number 21. And on top of that, there is the sewer line that runs at the edge of the current balcony of number 19 that was also a limitation. So we decided to not go beyond the footprint of the existing house and try to control the height and give back the view corridors to what we believe all the properties around, and trying to be as respectful as we could with every single of the neighbors. We decided as well to... Oh, sorry. There has been a lot of mention about the excavation. What I have to point out to the panel is that the current floor level of the existing house at number 19 is already 1.2 meters below the street level. So we are not going down a whole level in order to achieve the desired height. We've only gone down an extra, 1.2, give or take, on the furthest part, and then, as the site slopes down, the excavation is lower. We, of course, have done a geotech assessment through an engineer, which has determined where the position of the rock is and things like that. We spoke to a Sydney Water Coordination company in Sydney called MGP to see where can we place the house in relation to the sewer lines that exist in there, and a number of things. The excavation is also towards the north side, purposely because the house on the south side on number 21 is closer to the boundary that the current regulation states. So by being 1 meter from the north side from us, plus the meter that the number 17 has to the boundary, means that we can have a very decent separation from number 21 in terms of excavation. It was a decision based on the assumed or age of 17 and 21 and, the potential structural risk that will present to the properties. I think some of the other answers are going to... question will be answered by Anne.
Thank you.
My name's Anne Trezise. I'm a town planner. 345 Keira Street is our office address. Thank you for the opportunity of speaking to you. Just to, summarise why we consider the development to be overall a lesser impact than the existing building is because the current building has a floor space ratio of 0.61 to 1. The proposed building is, we've said 0.45 to 1 and council has assisted 0.46 to 1, but either way, significantly less than the existing development. It also has a much smaller building footprint than the existing development. Just to recap on what Alex has said as far as the setback from the side boundary, not only was that choice made to provide greater safety and certainty in relation to structural issues because the property on the south side is so close, it also then goes and provides greater amenity for people who are actually then living in there because we actually aren't walking, we're not having people walking down past, it's a different thought I'm trying to have there. So when people are walking along the street, what they're actually seeing is effectively a two-storey building because you actually are having a building which is set way down because the existing structural levels of the house. And what we have presented on top of that is the storey which is in contention is actually set quite a distance back from the boundary. So the impact to the streetscape, which is we consider to be quite significant as well and shouldn't be lost in the overall discussion about what is important in how we assess bulk and that sort of thing. I'll just go to my notes. one of the issues was that was raised was about how we, amenity is improved, and I can see there's been a draft condition number 20 which has actually been introduced to go and provide screening along the balcony of the third story, the top floor, so that would actually then address those issues. To our mind, all the issues of privacy have essentially been addressed in the development that's been submitted, because there is now obscure glazing throughout the proposal. The screening that's been proposed will add to that. There's also been the lowering of stairs along that entrance there, which actually then means that people, when they're walking along to get access to the front door, actually aren't walking. You know, we've lowered that in order to minimise any impacts on privacy on that property. There's also been a screen that's been introduced to the main living area where you access that area from the back, so that there's no opportunity then to have impacts that way. In relation to the third floor and impacts on privacy, it is actually allocated as a bedroom for the master bedroom. So the issue of people actually being there and looking out and impacting on people's privacy, to my mind, is nowhere near as extensive or significant as if you're actually, for example, it was going to be a rumpus room, in which case it would be a very significant kind of impact in the context of how your privacy might be impacted. Given that it's a bedroom, then people only really be using it most times at night and maybe early mornings and that sort of thing. One of the things that we're very happy that we've been able to do with this proposal is actually introduce a 3-metre corridor along the side boundary, which isn't, to our mind, has never happened along Coaldale Avenue. And given the block of the land is just over 10 metres wide, that's a pretty significant opportunity to have created and developed. We note that there is actually no limit to the number, or there's no constraint to having three stories in an E4 zone, as has been identified in Council's report. We'd also point out too that there is actually the height limit that exists in the zone is 9 metres, and we're actually 7.89 or thereabouts in the height. So, in the context of overall building footprint and what could have been there versus what is there, we consider there's, as best we can in this context, developed a very good balance about the design that's been proposed.
I would also like to point out that in one of the submissions, it's mentioned that we have excavated or proposed this semi-underground in order to achieve the third story. The reality is that if that garage is not there and it's to be limited to a two-story home, we need to push the house further to the east, because we need to fit a 6x6 garage behind the bedrooms 3 and 4, which will end up, having a bigger footprint, and we would have in this conversation over a different issue in relation to a different sort of impact. So it was sort of a balance between what we had to work with and how to achieve the brief. Balancing between regulation, between setbacks and views and a number of things. And like I said, there was a lot of thought behind the project, to the point that the DA hasn't been submitted blind. We actually had a pre-lodgement meeting, and there was a deep discussion at the meeting in all of these items. And furthermore, the proposal changed to adopt some of the recommendations that came from council at pre-lodgement stage, and Anne was with the project since the very beginning, even before the pre-lodgement. So there has been an ongoing liaison between different parties involved in order to come up with what we believe is a suitable outcome and balance to the interest.
Just in relation to that, what consultation have you had with the neighbouring property owners? Have you had any discussions with them? Or?
Yes, the neighbour on number 17 gave me a call directly.
Right.
They asked for me to run them through the project, which I happily did. I did. I spent about half an hour with them on the phone. And they were concerned, even though, you know, they have 270-degree views, they were concerned that our proposal will block their views diagonally to the south east, because they said that they sit in their terrace and look diagonally over the balcony of the existing house in number 19, which we are not going.
And what about number 21? Do you have any contact with the owners there?
I returned the dock by memory. When we were on site, this is just a simple thing. Their dog escaped, and I was just returned the dog. That's the only contact that I've had with with them.
All right. Okay, well, I think the panel's probably got some questions. Did you want to start, Helena?
Yeah. Sorry, I just wanted to ask about the shadow diagrams.
Yes.
So you heard the neighbours... town planners say that they were concerned that the shadow diagrams weren't accurate. And then looking at the shadow diagrams myself, I'm just not sure, looking at the existing shadows seem to have a similar profile to the proposed building rather than the existing building. So I'm just wondering if you're confident that they're actually correct.
Yeah, are you looking at this?
Well, for
page
example,
here?
This little projection up appears to mirror what is proposed, having the upper level third story of the proposal. But this is the existing
at
shadow.
At 11 a.m.?
At 11 a.m.?
Yeah.
See how it projects up like there's a third story?
Yeah.
That's the existing shadow, so I'm just wondering if that's incorrect or not.
No, it is not incorrect. What I have to say is that, you know, the shadow diagrams come from 3D modeling of the contours using all the information that we have from the survey. That's as accurate as we can get it.
Can you explain to me why it has the profile of the proposal rather than the profile of the existing house?
Because the...
Well, I guess in addition to that, I've never seen shadow diagrams before which actually point out the solar access gain but not the loss. So there is actually, I mean, there is additional shadow. It's just a comment. I wouldn't normally think that would be a reasonable way to prepare shadow diagrams. Not to it may be appropriate to identify both loss and gain, but not just gain and just ignore the loss, because it's a bit misleading for other people to be reading it.
Understood. In relation to the loss of, I think overall, and the shadow diagram demonstrates that there is a significant gain on the backyard of solar gain. Now I understand, and I know where from the submission where the shadow, the solar loss is placed. On this photograph, which is a drone image in May, so it's a different in the context of the shadow diagram, but we can see that we can see the elevation of number 21 and that the whole back door is shaded, and there is only a small portion of solar access to the edge. And what the shadow diagram demonstrates is that yes, in fact, there is a little bit of extra shade put on that part of the deck. The actual loss is between the edge of the deck and the boundary, and not directly on the actual sitting area, as it was claimed on their submission.
Sorry, can you just explain again? What was What's the time of that photo? Timing of it?
Yeah, early May, about 11 o'clock in the morning. But it is...
don't agree with your point that the additional gain, the solar gain, is more than the loss, because it looks to me on these like it's pretty much balanced, and it is relocating the solar access away from where it is at the neighbouring property's private open space is.
But
I mean, if you look here, for example, you lost that, but you've gained that. It's about the same. You've lost that, but you've gained that. Are you not counting, like, you're not saying that that is the same as that?
Yes, but that's...
So, and once again, here, that may be a little bit bigger than that, but it's pretty balanced. Where do we leave that?
You're assuming, you know, that the loss that you're pointing out is on the roof. And the gain that I'm pointing out is on the yard, and I think that's where the difference lays. All what you point to me just now as the difference where on the roof of the property, where the part that I point out that we have solar gain is on the actual ground. And I think there is a big difference between one and the other.
Okay, well, I'm probably pointing at the wrong ones. There's, yeah, this one over here, which is obviously not on the roof.
At which time?
At 1 p.m. That's the private open space of the neighbouring property, is that correct?
Yes.
What I'm talking about is this here.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
In the photograph, you can see how busy that is, and that portion here is already covered there. So
just so you can see what is going to happen.
Yeah.
We're talking about this part of your deck here at 1 o'clock. Saying that this is, you've got a tree there and it's already.
You've never introduced yourself. We're doing a beautiful house. We're doing a beautiful house. I love my backyard. Alright? I'm going to fight for it.
Okay.
I would be doing the same. Yes.
I've actually got a question. I don't know if it's appropriate. Anyway, the formwork facing the the number 21, appears to go sort of higher than the floor of the top story. It's quite large. Is there any way it could be sort of brought down and it's not quite so sort of overpowering?
Yes.
Does it have to be that tall?
No, it doesn't. It is a fair point. The reason why it stayed at that height, it was because the original proposal had where the void is placed on the plans. That used to be a platform for yoga and meditation. And because of the submissions regarding privacy and bulk, we decided to remove that altogether and bring the height of those high windows from 1.23 to half a meter. And we just left the wall, the height of the wall where it was. We focused more on bringing down the windows, removing the master bedroom and the ensuite had operable shutters to the void that would gain indirect light through all those high windows above the formwork wall, and to remove every possibility of overshadowing altogether, we remove the shutters, we make the bedroom with zero windows to the south side, we remove the yoga platform, we left the void as a void, and as part of the original mass volume composition and articulation of the project from a design point of view, we left the formwork wall where it was. Can it be brought down? Yes. I'm open to consider that as a possibility, as long as we don't compromise the balance and end up, you know, making the bulk, you know, appear more radical elsewhere.
A couple of questions, one relating to that wall. I've been looking for a dimension off the boundary and I can't find one. And you mentioned 3 meters, but is that which part set back 3 meters? Oh, sorry, I'm looking on the site plan, not the.
Yeah, I think it's
2.4.
Yeah, it is on the site plan. It is
2.4. The wall, and I guess we'll focus on the wall because I think that's probably, out of all of this development, that's probably the thing that causes most angst to the neighbour and potentially most impact, that high wall. So that's 2.4 off the boundary?
No, the concrete wall is one metre to the boundary.
Okay.
And the bedroom wall, bedroom walk-in wardrobe and ensuite at the upper level is 2.4.
Yep. So it's 2.4 back there and 1.08. Okay. The other question I have is the upper level, I guess the third story, it's referred to, I think, as the upper level on the plans. That doesn't cover the entire footprint of the building.
No, it's a very small footprint, yes.
And I noticed that it is pushed, firstly, towards the south, so it's lining up with the building below it.
Correct.
To the south, but there's quite a distance to the north.
Correct.
I'm just wondering, particularly when we're discussing shadow diagrams and your modelling, whether you've modelled what would happen if that third level was pushed to the northern wall. What change would that be in the shadowing on the property to the south?
Yes, so there were a number of things to assess based on those possibilities. The first one was that the side is very narrow.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah. But did you give consideration to moving that up floor to the north?
At some stage, I did. There is a structural reason why it's there. It's because it's lining up with the southern wall of the bedrooms and the bathroom and in the middle level, so that we can run a structural member that will be load-bearing and carry the weight all the way down.
But then the northern wall's not sitting on a structural wall, so what would be the difference? Your northern elevation would be sitting on a structural wall and your southern wouldn't. Your northern's not at the moment, so you've obviously
the northern elevation it is it's sitting. So the north side of the upper level is resting on the south wall of the bathroom and the powder room on the from the
so
mid-level.
The only reason it's there is for structural reasons.
That was one reason. The other reason was because we were aware of all the properties behind Calder Avenue that all have, every single one of them pretty much, have a rooftop terrace on top of their garage.
Right.
And we were aware that we didn't want to block views, and we had to choose one side to provide a 3-meter corridor, which, as Anne said, it is inexistent in any other property on the east side of Calder Avenue.
Sorry, you had to choose one side to create a 3-meter corridor.
Yeah, either the north side or the south side.
Yeah, but that's not talking about the upper level, though, because the upper level's not the full width of the building.
No, but you need to have the view corridor that you're talking about at the upper level.
Okay.
But I actually disagree with it. It doesn't look like that is. The powder room and the bathroom is actually further. I don't line up.
Yeah. The reason for raising it is that there is concern about solar access, and there is concern about a third story. I mean, if the third story was moved to the north, surely that would have a positive impact in the length of the shadow over the property to the south.
Correct.
And visual bulk as well, because the view from the south is seeing that, you know, I guess the critical view, and I think it's fair to say with respect to the owners of number 21, it's the bit that you're going to see when you walk out into your backyard. You're not, the rest of it does probably not so much of a concern. Well, yeah. I understand your concern, and that's why I'm raising the point, because, you know, at what expense and at whose expense does this happen? And I can see your point about that wall. And the other question I was going to ask about is, you know, although the building is articulated on that southern boundary, that length of wall, which we'll call the critical wall, is not articulated. And it's a void behind for the upper levels. So I'm just wondering whether it might be beneficial to think about either or putting some articulation into that. In other words, when I say articulation, I mean so it's not like that. It might be, you know, like that.
Setbacks.
Part of it might be set back. Part of it might be close. Part of it might be further back. Or indeed, you know, whether that glass section needs to be there at all, for example.
I think that's the point, that you've taken out the yoga platform, but the bulk of what was there is still there.
But if we focus strictly on regulation, that wall is 1 meter of the boundary and is below 7 meters in height, which is permissible by the DCP. So in a strict regulation point of view, that wall, and it's shorter than, well, it's below 7 meters. It's 5.5 something.
Yeah.
So it could stay there. And furthermore, the wall of the master bedroom, which is what ultimately produced that extra shadow on number 21, it is 2.4 meters of the boundary, okay, but is way below the 9-meter maximum height permissible by the DCP on this block of land. So strictly, if we leave it exactly at the same height and we move it, you know, an extra 600 to the north, it will be within the 3 meters, and it will be very hard to argue against, and it will have a very similar impact to what it has now. What I'm trying to say is that the DCP is a design control plan, and some projects need to be assessed upon merit, and we have chosen where to put the balance into.
Yeah, look, I think if you want to talk about strict controls, your floor space ratio is 0.3 to 1. So if you want to stick to strict controls, that's the strict control, and you're way outside of that. Yeah. The question is, you started off talking about and what I interpreted as an holistic approach to this design. Now you're talking like you're talking about DCP numbers, and that's not an holistic approach. An holistic approach would be to look at the impacts or potential impacts, and regardless of what the controls say, just like you're saying we shouldn't be restricted to 0.3 to 1, you should let us have 0.46 or whatever it is to 1, you need to look at the whole picture and say, well, okay, the DCP might let us put that wall there, but, you know, what's that going to do to our neighbours in the long term?
Look, apologies if it came across the wrong way. What I was trying to say is that if we make those changes and they get accepted on the base that they are permissible by the DCP, whether that will make the owners of number 21 happier or will be raising the same, or if they will be raising the same concerns.
I was not trying to have an approach to defend it. It's not about someone being happier. It's about this panel considering the impacts.
Okay.
Amenity impacts.
About numbers.
You know, with respect, if the neighbours are angry or happy, that's really not our concern, but our concern is the amenity impacts, and those impacts happen to be on the neighbours to your south. So that's where the questions and the comments are coming from.
We're really just trying to explore whether there's a way that this design can be tweaked so that it reduces the amenity impacts on the neighbouring property.
Understood.
And so you said that you could reduce the bulk of the building when it was previously, that previous question was asked, mm-hmm. into the bulk of the wall. So I'd be interested for you to explain that and also look at whether, we're now talking about whether it could, that upper level could be moved further to the north away from the neighbouring property.
Yes, look, I am certainly willing to explore any suggestion that the panel will put upon the project. And I am confident that a design solution will be found if that is the case. What we don't know is that design solution that will please both the panel and, in this case, number 21, will then upset another neighbour, and we'll have a similar discussion to that, to this, you know, later on. I'm not sure. That is my only concern.
Any other questions? Nope. Okay. All right. Well, that concludes item 3. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your attendance. We'll formally close the meeting at 6:33. As I mentioned, the panel's decisions will be published usually within 3 working days, so have a look out for those. If you have any questions, you can always contact the council staff if there's anything that you... And I actually encourage you, you know, whatever decision's made, if there's something that you don't understand, please talk to the council staff about it to get them to explain. Thanks very much.